Hello, and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 21. I am Pam, and with me, as always, is Riley.
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I am sick.
Boo.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that this podcast isn't too tough to edit later for you.
Yeah.
And I'll do my best to, like, not, not cough into the mic.
All right. So today, our main topic is going to be Dragon Age. Mm-hmm. And with us, we could think of no better guest than Tanya DePass. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome.
Doing good. How are you?
It is really cold where I'm at in Chicago, and I'm like sitting here semi-bundled up like a little blanket burrito. And I'm just like, why? Why is it so cold? Why do I live here? And then I'm like, yeah, I love my city. I have to tell myself this every winter.
Yeah, sort of the same here. Like, I love Toronto, but it gets really, really cold. Mm-hmm. So you are a multi-talented person. You're a writer and a podcaster and a diversity advocate for games. Do you want to talk a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So for those that are on Twitter or have been on Twitter the last couple of years, I was legit angry about games at 6 a.m. a couple years ago and started a hashtag #IneedDiverseGames. And, you know, thanks to some folks who have much higher media presence than I do sharing it, it actually trended for a couple days. And out of that, the conversation kept going about wanting diversity in games. And from there, it got its own Tumblr. It has its own Twitter account. We're now a nonprofit organization and part of the GDC scholarship program. So this is our second year of sending 25 people to the Game Developer Conference.
Nice.
That's awesome.
It's really cool, and it's very humbling to see, like, kind of how my literal anger at games eventually became this cool thing. Mm-hmm. I do podcasts, and the podcast kind of grew out of the work of I Need Diverse Games. And a lot of friends who also podcast were like, you keep talking about you want to do it. Just suck it up and go do a podcast.
Yeah.
And so we did. We were going to talk with Chris Algu of Brooklyn Gamery. And he's like, well, is it an interview? Is it a podcast? And I'm like, sure, a podcast. We can do that. And within 8 hours, we put together Fresh Out of Tokens. And it's over a year, and our 80th episode comes out next week.
Nice.
Huh, congratulations.
Thank you. And I stream on occasion and yell a lot about video games and what I'm playing. So I need to actually get back to my umpteenth play of Inquisition, because I modded an Inquisitor to look like Fenris. And that's been my current playthrough of Inquisition.
I think I've seen the pictures on Tumblr. And it looks like almost exactly like Fenris. It's pretty cool.
Thank you. My only wish I had was for a full body mod for his markings. I saw one person post a thing on Tumblr, and they said they made their own mod. But I guess they either didn't put it on the Nexus, or maybe they're not in fandom, or don't answer asks from people they don't follow. Because I was like, oh, so are you going to put this on the Nexus? And never got an answer.
Oh.
That was my exact reaction. Like, oh.
But please.
All right. And so you also are a writer. I think you just had a piece in Polygon not too long ago.
Yes, I actually wrote about Watch Dogs 2 and how the subtle racism actually won me over, because I hated the first Watch Dogs so much I took it back the next day after getting it.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of especially people from Chicago were really mad at that game.
Yeah, we don't have green rolling hills that follow our expressways. That and Aiden Pierce was the most unlikable protagonist I've ever met in a game. Like, I felt dirty playing as this character because he's so unredeemable.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just read like kind of bro dude power fantasy. And I was like, I feel weird and creepy. And this doesn't like the city I grew up in. I'm taking you back for Diablo. So I had no high hopes for Watch Dogs 2, even with the black protagonist. Because I was like, if it's Aiden Pierce 2.0, I'm going to hate it even more because it's a black dude, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I got a chance to write about it for Polygon. And I was actually kind of bored with it, because I was like, why am I trying to join this hacker group? Why am I doing this? And then little subtle things that popped up in the game kind of slowly won me over. And, you know, It's my second in line for Game of the Year of 2016, but oh, wow. Mafia 3 has my heart and soul, so. Yeah, I write about games when I can. I'm actually going to have a piece in The Learned Fangirl about Rogue One.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I figure if I have an unpopular opinion, I should try to get paid for it.
Yeah. always try to get paid.
Yeah.
Well, yes, always get paid, but I figure for the hassle I'll probably get once this comes out, I might as well make some money off it.
Yeah.
Because I still have people that argue with me about my Ghostbusters piece, which was the first thing I did for Polygon.
Oh, jeez.
Look, people still argue with me about my off-roll piece about Dragon Age, and it's over a year old now.
Yeah.
God, get a life, people.
Have a hard time letting go.
Oh, yes. I'll bring it up later because there were a lot of great viewer questions or listener questions. Why did I say viewer? I have that too. I also had to have Twitch on the brain because I was watching a friend's stream right before we started. but I remember when I shared it on Tumblr. Now, keep in mind, this is 1,500 words about the three Dragon Age games at that point. Mm-hmm. And all someone took out of it on a reblog from Tumblr is that I hate Mother Giselle. That was literally their whole take out of all of that wordage.
Yeah, it's always sort of annoying what people sort of cling on to in like a large piece of writing or mm-hmm. whatever. But yeah, you're doing good work though. Thank you for taking all that mm-hmm. bullshit from everybody.
You're welcome. I realize that a lot of people wouldn't keep going. And there are times I want to quit. I've made no secret of this. But I'm also really ornery. And the mm-hmm. easiest way to get me to keep going is to tell me to stop.
Yeah.
So when I get stupid emails, you know, like someone emailed me over the Polygon piece saying that I was the real racist.
Oh, true.
Yep. And couldn't even bother to send it from a computer. It was sent from their phone.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, you get the little, like, sent from my iPhone at the
it
bottom.
Was sent from my HTC, and I was like, okay, dude. And it was someone in the UK. That's what really got me. I'm like, so, Brexit didn't make a difference to y'all. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so we can get started with just what we've been up to over the last week or two. Tanya, did you want to start out with what you've been doing?
Sure. So I've been playing Final Fantasy 15, aka Boy Band Road Trip 15. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. I didn't know what to expect because I played both demos, and the demo that we got on the PS4 almost put me off the game if I hadn't gotten the demo that came with Final Fantasy Type-0.
Yeah, I played the one on the PS4. I was like, wow, this sucks. So I haven't even picked it up. It was just like a little, like you run through a forest and then there's some combat. Wasn't there a part where you're driving a car? I don't even remember. It just wasn't,
no.
It wasn't fun. Like there was nothing appealing about it.
You were like Kid Noctis 2 for a little bit
yeah.
and then Carbuncle was with you. I was like, oh my God, this is the most boring thing ever. So why would I go buy this? And then I saw people playing it and I'm like, oh, okay. It's not as bad as I thought.
I've been seeing, like, the, was it Prompto's the blonde one?
Yes.
All mm-hmm. I've been seeing are, like, his selfies on my Twitter feed, and I was like, this dude is my dude!
and it's surprisingly deep. Like, there's actually these kind of emotional segues where they have conversations where I'm like, how dare you assault me with these feels? Because this is not what I expected when I played this game. I'm like, oh, it's a cute game, we'll ride some chocobos, stop whatever the evil is. And suddenly, this deep conversation in the middle of the night on a hotel roof. What's going on?
I feel attacked.
I came for a good time in selfies, and I feel so sick right now. And then I've gone back to Skyrim with the special edition release. I've actually gotten further, and my friends have had a good time teasing me because I didn't know the Stormcloaks were racist, and I joined the Stormcloaks by accident.
Oh, no.
Oops.
But I got a chance to betray them, and now my Red Guard is back in good standing with the Imperials for all the good it'll do me. And still Watch Dogs, too. I'm really enjoying it. You know, I wrote the piece on it. I'm still enjoying it. And, you know, it's a fun game because, like, you know, Marcus is a big old nerd. He's a happy dude until the game. certain events in the game. I don't want to spoil it if people have not played it. But there are a lot of things, you know, including that, you know, casual racism that Black people, especially working in tech, deal with, or, you know, in our daily lives, that's pervasive throughout the game, but it doesn't beat you over the head with it. It is subtle enough to go, I've had that microaggression. I know exactly where this came from. Huh. So it, that's how it kind of won me over.
Yeah, it's nice that they sort of show an awareness of things like that. I haven't played it myself, but it from everything I've heard, it sounds like they're doing a pretty good job with Watch Dogs 2.
Yeah, and they got some outside consultants because the Montreal studio is very white. Mm-hmm. I did get a chance to visit the studio and talk, but I'm like, there's not a Black person I see. At least for the group that came to my talk, there probably are Black people there. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, for the group that made the game, I don't know that there's a lot of Black people involved in it. I know someone who wound up consulting on it. But the fact that they went to that step and did it is what made me really happy. I've been watching a really interesting documentary series called Hip Hop Evolution on Netflix, because I grew up with hip hop and I've seen all the shifts in the genre, but I don't have that deep knowledge of it. And I was like, this is a cool thing to sit and watch with a cup of tea and kind of reacquaint myself with the roots of the genre. And I'm slowly, slowly making my way through N.K. Jemisin's fifth season, mostly because I take the book with me when I travel and I swear I'm going to read it on the flight. and then I'm asleep before takeoff.
All right. Is that it for you?
Yeah. I mean, I've mostly been thinking about taxes, but that's not very exciting. it's that time of year. And this is my first year really kind of doing the taxes as a freelancer. And I have no clue how starting the nonprofit affects things. So I will be seeking out tax help for the first time in my adult life.
Lucky you. Last year, I had started a corporation because I was freelancing sort of as a contractor. And it actually only ended up going for 3 months. And then I got a permanent job. So it was just this giant, giant hassle for 3 months of work.
Wow. That's really bad.
Yeah. as soon as it ended, I was just like, okay, shut it down. Shut down the corporation. I don't want to deal with it ever again.
Yeah, I thought about doing a separate LLC for some things, and I'm just like, I can't. It'll be actually more expensive than setting up the nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And B, I'm just like, there's just so much hassle involved for the intermittent stuff I'm doing. It's so not worth it.
Yeah.
But that's it.
All right. Riley, what have you been up to?
Like, I think on our last podcast, I was like, oh, yeah, during the break, I'm going to play so many video games. And I really did not end up doing that at all.
No. Played the same video games.
Yeah. I played Overwatch, of course, because the Christmas stuff was happening. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, the last day of the event. And so I bought some loot boxes, and I got, I think, like, maybe one or two of the skins. And, like, I got basically nothing. So I used just, like, my coins that I had in the game to buy, like, the Tracer skin. Yeah. It was probably, like, the most disappointing holiday event for me because, like, I got all, like, the summer one and even the Halloween one. I got a bunch of different skins, and this one I got, like, 3 or 4.
Oh.
So... yeah, I was kind of disappointed, but I bought the one that I really wanted, so.
I got most of them, except for May, which is the one that I really wanted.
Oh, yeah.
And so this holiday event, same as last holiday event, I had saved up for the Mercy skin. I had enough, and then I missed the end of the event. So, of course, for the Christmas event, it ended the day I moved. So I was going to get it the day before, and then I packed my computer, and I was like, oh, shit. So I missed it again.
No. Oh my god. Next year, I guess.
So now I have like 6,000 coins or something stupid.
Oh my gosh, I have like nothing to spend them on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so unfortunate. And then I jumped back into Heroes of the Storm. And I got the free I did those the 30 game promotion or whatever that was going on with Overwatch. Mm-hmm. So I got the Genji skin, and then I got like the couple of the free heroes. So I was trying out the new hero and some of the new maps that I haven't seen. And it's still pretty fun. It's like, the only thing with HOTS is like the games are so long. Like at least with Overwatch, you can do like a full match and maybe if you're lucky, like I would say like 15, 20 minutes. But like, HOTS, like you're spending at least like definitely 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Overwatch, you can do like one round in like, what is it, like three? I think, like, you know, it's pretty quick, but, and then, like, the death timers in Heroes of the Storm are, like, especially near the end of the game, you're waiting, like, a minute and a half.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, going from Overwatch, which is, like, this, like, quick, speedy game, to Heroes of the Storm was kind of rough sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty fun, and I bought, they had Christmas skins, too, so I bought, Lunara's Christmas skin. She's, like, a dryad, and her spear is, like, a Christmas tree on the end of like a giant like candy cane. It's so cute. It's adorable. And I got like a snowflake mount that people can ride on, so that was really good too.
That's cool.
And then apart from games, because I think it's there's like a Studio Ghibli event happening kind of everywhere. I think it's like an anniversary or something. But they're showing all of Miyazaki's films at the TIFF Lightbox in Toronto. Oh. So for Boxing Day, I took my brother and his girlfriend, our friend Sarah, and my boyfriend, and took them all to see Princess Mononoke because I think only my brother and I have seen it, and I wanted to see it in, like, an actual theater.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the credits opened, and I was just like, I was like, I love this movie so much. And it was so good on the big screen. It was beautiful. Like, it, and it was all, like, it was in, like, digital format. So, like, it was on Blu-ray, like, that kind of quality. So it looked so good. And, like, getting out of the theater, my brother's girlfriend, she kind of, she turned and she looked at me, and she's like, I didn't expect a film like that to be so feminist. And I was like, well, that's kind of how Miyazaki has written his female characters. Yeah, I just, I love all of his movies, and Mononoke is my absolute favorite, so it was a real treat to get to see it in a big theater like that.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that TIFF shows older movies quite often. Yeah. I haven't seen any Studio Ghibli movies.
Oh, really? You should come hang out because I have like 10. I have a lot. And then I went to see Rogue One over the holidays. And I've seen some people say that they didn't like it as much. But I loved it. I got out of the theater and I was like, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know the like anything about it. I didn't look anything up before I went. I loved it. I thought it was great. And I am like, I'll probably go and look and see what other people thought about it, because it's always good to see different opinions and stuff like that. But I thought it was fantastic. And then I've been sick this last week. So I spent like all of Wednesday, watching a Korean drama on Netflix, a different one this time. And this one is called, Descendants of the Sun. And, it kind of puts, soldiers and doctors, like together in a, like a remote, area. And that was also really good. The characters that they had in, first thing that I noticed was that there was a woman in a wheelchair, which I thought was interesting. She was a doctor, and she was kind of like the main character's like best friend. And it's neat to kind of see like some of the cultural differences, because Korea is like this like mystery to me. I'm learning more about it lately. But there's definitely like a social hierarchy that's happening, and this drama kind of like gave a little bit more information on that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was really neat. It was like funny and sad and serious. And it's only like 16 episodes, so it's, and there's only one season, so it's all like nice and condensed, I guess, instead of having like, what is it, like 13 seasons of like Grey's Anatomy, for example. But yeah, it was really enjoyable. Yeah,
that's, I liked good. It a lot. So the story gets all nicely wrapped up.
Yeah, the ending was kind of dumb.
Oh.
Like the very last episode, like it kind of I don't know if they were just looking at for like a funny way to end it, but they like they broke the fourth wall and like they start talking to whoever's watching.
Mm-hmm.
And they, yeah, it was weird. I don't know. I don't know if any of our viewers maybe will watch it after I've talked about it. It was really good, like, up until the last, like, 5 minutes, and then I was like, what the fuck?
No.
But yeah, it was good. It was, like, well, I don't know, lots of good, like, political drama, too, on there, so I appreciated that.
Cool.
And then I listened to the full Starboy album a couple days ago, and I had only listened to a couple tracks before, and the whole album is it's like, it's genius. It's perfect. It's like, The Weeknd is such a good artist, so I hadn't really listened to his other music before, but Starboy, like, I listened to it from start to finish, and it's a great album. And then I saw on Twitter, this podcast called It's Our Turn, and it's run by a woman named Kathy Ford, and her and it's four or five other women, they kind of do like a round table on games, but it's like board games, at least so far, the first two episodes that I've listened to. And it's been really nice hearing another, like, gaming podcast that has women's voices on it. So, yeah, I just wanted to give them a little bit of a shout-out because their first two episodes are pretty good. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. What kind of games, board games, did they talk about in the first couple episodes?
Well, the first one, they talked about a lot of different ones because they were kind of talking about, like, what got them into doing board games. So they were talking about, like, sitting around at home playing, like, Monopoly, they mentioned, and Power Grid. Somebody mentioned Phase 10, which is one of my favorite card games.
Mm-hmm.
One of the girls was talking about Magic, stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to kind of hearing more about that, because I like board games, I just don't play them very often, so.
Right.
Even, what else did they mention? Like, Pandemic, I think, so.
Cool.
That's it for me. What have you been up to, Pam?
Well, I had a amount of time to play games in between moving and everything. So I played Dead Rising 4. I got that for Christmas, and I completed it by like the 28th or something. it was good. They sort of changed it up a little bit from the previous game. So they made it sort of smoother mechanically, but they also took away a lot of the sort of weird, charming, ridiculous parts of the game. Which in some cases it's good. Like in Dead Rising 3, they had these psychopaths. Well, they're in all the games, but they're all really, really tasteless. Like, kind of gross and kind of offensive. And so they took those out, which is good, but then they also took out some other sort of just personality type things in the game. There's actually a really good YouTube video. I think it's by Errant Signal. And he sort of goes over all the ways that it's changed, which I agree with, although I just, in general, enjoyed playing through the game. I also played a bunch of Steam games since the Steam holiday sale was on. One of them is called Epistory Typing Chronicles, and it's this really charming game where you play a girl who rides a fox, and you're traveling through this world that looks like it's sort of like papercraft or origami, and it's sort of unfolding as you explore it, and the whole game mechanic is typing. So you get attacked by these insects, and they like throw words at you, and you have to type the words before they reach you. So it's pretty cool. I haven't played too many of those. Like, I know Typing of the Dead is a big sort of typing game, but I liked this. It was neat, and there's all different kinds of magic. So if you're using fire, it'll burn the word and then the next word as well. Or if you're using electricity, it'll like chain lightning to words around it and destroy them. So it was a pretty neat game.
I feel like I would die.
You would die.
Yep.
I feel like it had the difficulty sort of changed based on how well you were doing. So I did die a few times, but it wasn't too difficult, even with all my typos. I also played another game called Black Closet, and it is by the people who did Long Live the Queen. Did you ever play that?
No, I know of it, though.
Okay. So in this one, you play the, like, the class president of this high-class boarding school, and you have to keep the school's reputation up. And so you have these minions, who are these other girls, who will sort of do your bidding, and so something will come up, like, oh, someone has vandalized the hallway, or some textbooks have gone missing, or these two students are in a fight, and you have to sort of solve the mystery of what happened in order to keep the reputation of your school and not be visited by scandal. And then there's also this sort of other sort of kind of dating sim thing where you're like increasing your relationship with all of the girls, and you can romance at least one of them. So it's pretty cool. It's difficult. Like, I haven't managed. I've put in a few hours yet, and I've gotten a game over every time because my school just gets scandalized, and I get fired from my position.
Oh no!
Yeah. Other than that, I read a novella called Ghost Girl in the Corner, which is by Daniel Jose Older, and it's part of a series of young adult novels he does called the Shadow Shaper series, and it's basically a ghost story about a girl who can sort of see and communicate with ghosts, and she solves a mystery along with her friends. It was really cool. I think I want to read some more of his books once I'm... Well, I finished this one, but at some point later. And I think that's it for what I've been doing. At least that's it for what I can remember, because my brain is... my brain is tired. I'm sure I played more. Okay, so we can move on to our main topic for the show, which is Dragon Age. I know we are all big fans of the series. For anyone who doesn't know, Dragon Age is a series from BioWare. There is currently 3 games in the series. It's a role-playing game, and yeah. That's basically it. I'm sure there's a lot more that we can say, but...
it's hard to wrap it up in a couple sentences.
It is hard to wrap it up, especially since each one sort of has their own setting and their own different protagonist. It's not like Mass Effect where you're doing one big storyline through the whole trilogy. Mm-hmm. So, how did you get into Dragon Age, Tanya?
So... how did I get into Dragon Age? It feels like it's been so long. I know I picked up the first Dragon Age well after release. I think maybe even Awakenings was out by the time I picked it up. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those, hey, this is fantasy. I like it. There are dragons. I'm a big nerd. I'll pick it up. And the more I played, the more I got sucked into it because, you know, the first Dragon Age is such a long, complex game. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we got our... expansion with Awakenings and all little DLCs, I just really got into it. And because there was such a variety of characters you could be, you know, I wanted to kind of go through and see what everyone's story was. Mm-hmm. And so I became that person that had multiple wardens. I still have multiple wardens. And, you know, the every time I played, it was a different experience. I found new lore to kind of fall into. And, you know, I never really looked back. I was one of those people that pre-ordered Dragon Age 2. Loved Hawk, loved the story. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't like Dragon Age 2 because they felt it was rushed or
well, they're wrong.
You. They're wrong.
I know. And because it is my absolute favorite of the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you get to spend time with these characters. You see their growth. And yes, it was a short dev cycle. But, you know, these characters have lives outside of Hawk, which is one of the things that really appealed to me. Meg Giant, who wrote a good chunk of 80 Days, gave mm-hmm. a talk at GDC actually about NPC agency and included Dragon Age as a big part of her talk. Because I can't think of many games where your party exists outside the protagonist. You know, like Fenris and Isabella get together if you don't romance them as Hawk. Or, you know, Fenris and Donnick start playing cards. You know, everyone has a life outside of out of the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's this group of misfits, you know, it also encapsulates a lot of people that I know in personality types. So it's just like, it's always going to have a special place in my heart. And Inquisition is a big sprawling open world version of that. And I it took a while to grow on me. But I did take a week off when it launched. I took a week of vacation and just played the game straight through. It's actually what got me into streaming because I was like, I'll stream. Because I know a lot of Dragon Age nerds, because mm-hmm. I'm one of them. And, you know, after I played through a couple times, I was like, okay, even though there's a limit of kind of what I can play as, there's still four stories to be told, and I want to go through it. And, you know, I think by my third or fourth play, I finally kind of found my quote-unquote canon Inquisitor. Right. And, you know, I actually have it on all three platforms. I'm that person.
Oh, God.
Well, at launch, I bought it on PC and PS4 because until Inquisition, I'd never played a Dragon Age game on console. But there were a lot of problems with it on PC at launch. You know, like the frame rate was bad. And I've got a pretty decent computer. So I wound up playing it more on PS4 until all the patches were out and everything. And then I started a playthrough on PC, which is my Fenris Inquisitor. And, you know, it just... It's kind of my comfort food game at this point because it's familiar. I don't have to put a lot of effort into playing unless I'm really trying to do something I'd never done before, like a different quest or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love BioWare games. I'm wearing my Tevinter shirt as we record this. But, you know, it was interesting. I have several gripes with the game, but it's cool to see the progression. You know, we got the giant sprawl of Origin, even though it was not open world. It was still a very large game. Then we got a very tight, compact story in DA2. And then we went back out to the open world sprawl with DAI. And, you know, with the exception of the bears in the hinterlands. Because fucking bears, man.
Yeah.
You know, I still love the series. I feel like I can critique the game and still love it. Which is where a lot of people, I think, kind of get caught. It's like... But you love it, therefore you found a bad thing, but you don't really love it, and they get caught in that cycle.
Mm.
Yeah, like you dedicate this much time and energy into something that you actually hated.
Some people do. Some people hate follow and do that.
I guess.
And it's like, I'm like, you have way more time on your hands than I ever will.
Yeah, it's so funny when people sort of think that way. Like if you criticize video games, you're like, you hate video games. Like, really? Like, I dedicate this many hours of my life every day to a thing that I hate? No, I'm just trying to make them better.
Yeah, exactly. Well, logic doesn't come to a lot of people, so.
That's true. Riley, how about you? What was your sort of Dragon Age path?
It's hard to remember. Like, I know exactly how I got into Mass Effect, but Dragon Age is kind of a little different. I'm pretty sure that I got it for PC, But then thinking about it, I don't know what PC I would have played it on because I had a Mac for a long time. So I'm like, I don't know. I don't remember, like, when or, like, what the start of it exactly was, but I remember playing Origins. And I remember there being, like, specific spots where it would always bug out and crash. What character was I playing? I think I was playing a Templar or something at the time, and every time I used a particular, or it might have been like when I switched to Alistair and I used a particular like ability of his, it would always crash.
Oh no.
So I have that like that memory. Dragon Age 2, or not Dragon Age 2, but like Dragon Age also, is like the first franchise, I guess is the right word, that I ever like wrote fanfic for. So oh. There's some pretty old fanfic lying around somewhere.
Nice.
I think I pre-ordered Dragon Age 2 as well. Mm-hmm. Also love Dragon Age 2. It's definitely my favorite of the three.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know that the popular opinion is that it's not the best one, but like I said before, people are wrong.
People are wrong.
They're very wrong.
Yeah. And then like Dragon Age Inquisition, I think I got that right when it came out as well, and then played it until like 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Or didn't even sleep at all before I had to go to work again. But
yeah.
Yeah, I just have like memories of playing it late at night, like playing all the games really late, and like restarting them, playing a different class, different race, and then restarting it again and playing it again, and then seeing like all the different endings that I could get. Like I love the story of the warden in the first one. Like if the game wasn't so friggin' long, I would probably play it more. But I think I've managed to get most of the endings in that one. I haven't played it in a long time though. And then, like Dragon Age 2, of course, like you can kind of get like a couple different endings. It just depends on like, what class and then like what gender you pick, because then you go through the game with a different sibling. So that's a bit different too. And then, of course, Inquisition. I definitely have not gotten all the endings, because Vivian always ends up being my divine. So I know that I haven't gotten all the endings. No. But yeah, it's Dragon Age is like, it's just so good. I've got lots of memories about playing it. I just don't remember exactly how I started playing it. So yeah, I don't know. A mystery.
Yeah, I kind of have a little memory lapse there too, which isn't surprising because my memory sucks. But did Dragon Age came out before Mass Effect or after Mass Effect?
I think before.
Yeah, okay. Because I remember getting it, and then once I played that, I was like, I need to play every BioWare game ever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely got Origins, and then pre-ordered 2, and then got 3, got Inquisition, and I don't think I took the whole week off, but I just took at least a day off when Inquisition first came out. One thing I really like about Dragon Age is that the games are so different. So again, just comparing it to Mass Effect, where it's one protagonist and one big overarching story, where, you know, the gameplay mechanics sort of get smoothed out over the game. But in Dragon Age, like, each game takes place in the same world, but is actually quite different of an experience. Like, Origins really focuses on those origin stories, whether you're a city elf or a dwarf or a human noble, and your game experience is sort of different because of that. And then it goes sort of to the opposite end of things with Dragon Age 2, which again, best Dragon Age, where there's only the one protagonist, which really makes them more of a character than I find either your warden or your inquisitor. And really focuses on like one specific time and place and all your companions, and then going to Inquisition, where it's just this huge sprawling world where you're kind of trying to save the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, the stakes are even different kind of in each one too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like the one difference that I appreciate the most between Mass Effect and Dragon Age is that Mass Effect, up until this point anyway, has been like about Shepard, and then Dragon Age is kind of about Thedas, and then your character is just, your characters are just in there, but at like different points, and they experience different things, and they're like kind of these like enclosed experiences, but they're also part of like the greater history, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it even gives more, like, in Dragon Age Origins, your warden can die because they aren't needed in the second game. Uh-huh. So it sort of opens up some more storytelling opportunities that way, since you don't need to have that specific continuity from game to game, even though your decisions can carry forward.
Definitely. I've not really killed a lot of my hawks. There was just one quote-unquote throwaway hawk I imported to have my kind of "This is all the terrible things" playthrough.
No. The darkest timeline playthrough.
Basically, yes.
So, one of the things that's sort of constant throughout the three games, other than the place, is the sort of Templar versus Mages battle. Where do you guys fall on that? Do you have, like, a canon way of doing things, or do you like to see both ways, or
mages for life?
It depends on how I'm playing the character, actually. My quote-unquote canon inquisitor, I played him kind of antithetical to me. It's Max Trevelyan, and he's very devout, very much, you know, this is my destiny, I'm the third, kind of like what we saw with Sebastian Vale, where there was the heir of the spear in the third, so he had no problems with his place being given up to the Chantry. And he thought he knew what was what until that, you know, moment when you go in the Fade and you find out that it is not actually destiny. You're not precisely the chosen one. Mm-hmm. But by that point, he had chosen the Templars because he's devout and he thought that was right. And then he's like, I may have made an error. But for the most part, I go with mages.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm also a mage fan. I know sort of both groups have their issues, but I have to root for the ones who are being locked up in a tower and constantly tracked and help free them.
True. I also admit my weakness, at least in Inquisition, is because you get Sir Delwyn Barris.
Mm. Oh, yeah, he's so good.
I know, and I'm like, He's like a black dude who isn't a stereotype for once in the Dragon Age universe. I'll take it.
So speaking of that, that will segue into a question we have here from the Doc Web. And he's wondering your thoughts on representation of people of color in Dragon Age. And I know you've written about that before. he says the character creator is getting better, but the only NPCs of color seem to be human. Why not dwarves and elves?
Oh boy, how much time do we have? So coding non-humans as people of color is a slippery slope, and it's a bad thing. I actually was just talking about this on Twitter the other day, because there's elves, and you know, they're coded as the oppressed and everything else, and they are literally ghettoized in the game by being put in alienages. But the elves have gotten whiter over the course of the three games. Like, they literally are, they look and sound Welsh, mm-hmm, in Dragon Age 2. Mm-hmm. And the elves we meet in DAI are kind of, they're not much different than humans in terms of looks. Like, because I think Fiona and human female inquisitor look about the same in terms of height and build and everything. And I could be wrong. I don't have any screenshots in front of me, but
I think, yeah, you're right.
Okay, because I'm just like, I'm trying to picture it as I talk. And dwarves are, they are humanoid. And I've seen, like, you do get to see kind of various shades of dwarf. But remember in Dragon Age 2, we just got Varric, who was kind of blonde and hazel-eyed, and his brother, who is also blonde. We don't get to see a lot of people or elves or dwarves that could be coded as people of color that are NPCs walking around. Mm-hmm. And that could go back to fantasy kind of lore and the way that people treat fantasy and high fantasy is that, you know, the only quote-unquote dark elves are the drow, which we will be here all day if I start ranting about the drow. But I think it's just the kind of preset ideas about what fantasy is why we don't get to see quote-unquote dwarves and elves of color. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people that have played elves intentionally, like, go as dark as they can, or this is their canon, because they want their brown elf. And, you know, whatever someone's headcanon is, that's what their headcanon is. But in terms of NPCs, I have a hard time with that, because a lot of people code Qunari, dwarves, and elves as people of color.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's hard, because if the devs did make more dark-skinned elves, Qunari, or dwarves, the conversation would then turn into why the brown people have to be non-human, or why the brown people have to be villains in some cases, mm-hmm. depending on which game we're looking at. So it's a very fine line to walk. But if there was just more variety in the background NPCs, it could be better, and not kind of the main characters. Because one of the things I brought up before is the colorism in the game. And I don't think it's intentional, because when you start talking about dev intent, that is another thing that puts a lot of onus basically on you're doing this to be racist intentionally, when there's a lot of unconscious bias that is there and you don't realize it until it's pointed out. Mm-hmm. Or someone goes, hey, that thing you said or did was kind of, you know, that was really racist and we should talk about it. But one thing I pointed out was Dorian is a man of color. Mm-hmm. A lot of people read him as Indian because his voice actor is Indian. But Dorian's also very light. He like, if he were a quote-unquote real person, he'd probably be, like, my complexion darker. And I'm not that dark. But when we meet his father is very dark, and we already have a bad impression of Hallward before we even see him.
Mm. Right.
So there's that unconscious colorism there. And, you know, and Vivian is dark-skinned, and she's coded as very ambitious, a nice queen, a strong black woman. So, again, you get that reinforcement that dark-skinned characters are up to no good, with the exception of Ser Barriss. Because he is dark, but he's just very middle of the road. He is exemplary, you know, token minority, if you must.
Right.
So, I mean, I've written about this. I've talked about it a lot. I get a chance to talk about it. Because I've had David Gator, I've had Jennifer Hepler on the podcast. And we've talked about this stuff a little bit. And I've met the Weekses, and I've had a chance to actually kind of sit down with Patrick Weeks and bring up some of these issues. But we also remember that I want to give people a benefit out and say that they're not doing it intentionally. Mm-hmm. And if there was just a better spread of skin tones among the NPCs, it wouldn't be so blatant and it wouldn't be a question anymore, I think. But you have to be very careful when you're coding those characters that you will interact with that may be villainous, may be part of the overall plot line, because for those players, they're going to see a trope played out again and again, and that's not a place you want to keep going to, because, you know, as much as I love BioWare, and they do great things for LGBT representation, they have a lot of work to do in terms of race.
Yeah, for sure. I think they've been getting better, though, but I agree, like, they need just that wider spread so that it's like this one person isn't representative of all non-white mm-hmm. people, sort of. Like, Vivian would be fine if there was also more black characters that were, you know, middle of the road, as you say.
Yeah. Or, you know, if Vivian didn't act a certain way and she wasn't coded in behaviors that we read and associate a certain way with black women, especially dark-skinned black women. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that could be a podcast unto itself, just that one topic.
Yeah, I'm sure it could. All right, so we'll go on to some more listener questions, because people really came through for us this episode, which is nice. Let's go to something a little bit lighter. Which secondary character, this is from MK Patter, who was on our episode about The 100, Which secondary character have you been the most sad not to be able to smooch?
I'm going to go with Varric.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, that's right. I can't, like... Yeah. Yeah, where's the dwarf romances? Come on. I was going to say Lace Harding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'll take one of each.
You can kind of, like, you can flirt, but, you know, it doesn't really get to the smooch part.
No, you just get to kind of flirt with Lace, and that's as far as you go.
Yeah.
So I if I could, like, have a happy polyamorous thing with Varric and Lace Harding, I'd be real, I'd be good.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
That would be good. Are there any romanceable dwarves?
No.
At all? No.
Nope.
Nope.
Man. The character I've been most sad not to be able to smooch is not unsmoochable. I just fail spectacularly every time, and that's Fenris.
Oh, how do you fail Fenris?
I don't know. I think it might be because I'm always a mage, and that creates some kind of thing, but I'm always, like, just totally, totally flirting with him, and he's, like, never... takes the bait, I guess.
Okay, I'm gonna like walk you through. Yeah. I'm gonna walk you through this because I actually my canon Hawk is a mage, but he is a very there's no polite way to talk about this character. he's a self-hating fucked up mage.
Okay.
But I have managed to romance Fenris with a female mage Hawk once. I think there's a very fine balance you have to hit because you kind of have to leave him behind when it's a very pro magey mission.
Yeah. And yeah, you can't take him everywhere.
Yeah, I think that's probably it, because I always took him everywhere.
Yeah, he's just like, nope. He's just like, nope, no mage stuff.
Yeah. There's some things that you can do, and then he's like, are you sure you want to do that? And you're like, no.
All right, so we've got another character question from Orkchop. He says, Varric writes books, Morden sings in plays. What hobbies or side jobs do you envision your other Dragon Age buds having?
Let's see. I kind of like the fact that Fenris is really sarcastic with Varric and, you know, talks about dancing through the mansion. So I think he actually, like, dances and plays the lute because, you know, there's that lute that's always next to his bed. Mm-hmm. And this is, like, my own little headcanon. I'm sure someone will argue with me because fandom. but, you know, I feel like he probably was trained to do these things along with his other duties when he still was part of Daenerys' holdings. But I feel like as part of his kind of learning to be free, he would do that stuff for himself. And I don't know. I just feel like there's a little kernel of truth to that where he's sassing Varric, but that probably is what he does when he's by himself. I don't know, Hawk probably doesn't do anything other than, like, sleep, because everyone wants everything from Hawk.
Probably, yeah.
I feel like Aveline probably has the most stereotypically girly hobby ever, because, like, that just, it's an Aveline thing, where it's, like, no one would believe it if they saw her sitting there, like, I can't even think of, like, a girly thing she would do that would fit with Thetis, other than maybe knitting. Like, Aveline, you knit? I don't know. It's like, I just, because of the way her romance kind of plays out, where it's like everyone kind of gives her shit because she turns out to be a romantic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of the most stereotypically girly thing she could do and that would fit with Dragon Age, and I guess knitting is probably what, or weaving probably would come up.
She's the character who gives all of her friends homemade crafts for every holiday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. She get like makes dresses and people are like, where did you get this? And she's like, oh, I just found it. But never telling them she made it. Oh God, there's so many companions. So, well, we know Dorian reads a lot, and drinks. Alistair probably would do stuff that has nothing to do with cheese, because I feel like that fanon has worn itself out with him liking cheese.
Yeah. Maybe he gardens.
That's exactly what I thought. He's a gardener.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
That would be amazing.
And then I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm trying to think of other people, but there's so many Dragon Age companions.
There are, yeah. It's a what big group to say? Pick from.
I think that Cassandra writes fan fiction about Varric's books.
Definitely.
Oh my God, yes. That would be amazing.
Absolutely.
What other hobbies can you think of? Because I'm just like, I will be here all day if I try to think of a hobby for every single one of them.
I'm trying to think of what my boy Cullen would do.
Oh, God. Huh. See, I can see Cullen gardening, too. Like, him and Alistair gardening if they ever, like, retired.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
I like pretty boy, pretty blonde boys who garden.
There's actually some pretty good Alistair Cullen fanfic, by the way.
Oh, good.
Oh, really?
Good. Yeah, yeah.
You'll have to give me that link once we're done recording.
I will, yeah. I don't think it involves gardening, though.
No. Well,
sorry.
It's fanfic. There can't be... Oh, there's gardening.
Yeah, quote, it might unquote. Be that version.
All right, so the next question is from Thornmallow, who asks, the best party composition for entertaining banter. She loves the party members snarking at each other while they're roaming around.
Mm. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Since they didn't specify a game.
Yeah, any game.
Yeah, any game.
I would say Isabella, Fenris, and Anders.
Yeah, that is a good combo.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm not a fan of Meryl. I know someone will yell at me, but I'm not.
Why don't you love Meryl?
Oh, God, my Meryl feels. I don't know. And I was actually talking with friends about this when we were playing some Inquisition multiplayer a few nights ago. And they brought up the point that Meryl doesn't seem to have compassion for anything Fenris has gone through. It's like she just kind of blithely overlooks all the trauma he's had. And thinks he's just being mean when he doesn't like her. And he's got a very good reason to mistrust and hate blood mages.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of... And she also is very pixie manic dream girl to me. And I've never liked that trope.
Right.
And with a male hawk, and I've done the romance once and I felt kind of gross. With a male hawk mage romance, I just felt like there was a lot of codependency going on with Meryl.
Mm.
And I think way too much about video games, in case anyone's wondering. but I never got into her character. I just felt like she was pretty much I'm going to go do whatever I want. And, oh, the consequences. And now the Keeper's dead. And, oh, darn, I'm a terrible person. And I just feel like, of the companions, she didn't have the most personal growth. And maybe that changes later if we've gotten more DLC. But, like, I just felt she wasn't the most deeply developed, at least for the way that I saw her.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
Yeah, she seems a little immature. Like, I don't think I'd go the romance route with her. Just it's kind of like the same as with Liara in Mass Effect 1, where they just, like, seem really young.
Mm-hmm.
They do, it's kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And she's supposed to be the keeper in training, and I'm like, how are you this immature getting ready to lead your clan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now brace for all of the angry tweets with how can you hate Meryl?
We don't come get too many angry tweets. We don't not yet. Maybe you'll be the first.
our big tweet storm is going to be Meryl tweets.
Yeah.
That's okay. I can handle that. I was thinking back to the question at hand here. I like to bring It doesn't always go well because they're all squishy, but I like to bring Solas, Dorian, and Vivian all together.
Mm. Oh, God.
Because they just snark so hard at each other, and it's so good. And I'm like, yes, yes. Tear each other apart.
I always
they're so sassy.
Issues in Inquisition, because I always felt like I needed a balanced party with at least one of each class, and then
it doesn't the fourth go well could when be you bring whatever. All mages.
But yeah, like the first time I played, I was a rogue, and so I wanted to have like Cole and what's her name?
Sarah.
Because I thought that they would say interesting things to each other, but I was just like, I can't have three rogues. That's not a thing I can do. But
you just have to like maybe mod a little bit so that you're a little more like hearty, because I didn't mod at all, and I went like I played a mage and I brought three other mages with me, and I was like this is shit. But yeah.
Yeah, for entertaining banter in Inquisition, I really like having Iron Bull and Dorian. For Dragon Age 2, I really like Aveline. but not with Isabella. I really, really hate Aveline and Isabella together in a party.
Aveline is terrible towards
Isabella.
She's
really terrible. Like, yeah. I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, Aveline and most other people are okay.
Yeah.
Always Aveline. Always.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She was definitely one of my favorite characters from Dragon Age 2. I really liked her arc. It was, I think it was sort of one of the best developed ones, too, just sort of how her story progresses from year to year, I think it is.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of her.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. Let's go to a question from MTO Allpro. He says, Dragon Age is a series with really high stakes and where humanity, unlike in Mass Effect, is not that special. Do you appreciate that about it? I agree with the question.
And I've never given it that much thought because humanity is kind of screwed up in the Dragon Age series in the sense of cataclysm, things, bad things happening, and you have to fix it in one way or another. And I don't get the sense that the world will literally end, really, I think, in Dragon Age.
Mm-hmm.
You may get it a bit in Origin because, hey, if the Darkspawn win, it's all screwed up.
Yeah.
But still, like, the world will still be there. It's not like Mass Effect where, hey, the galaxy will die. So I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I never put that kind of thought to Dragon Age, really.
Yeah, I put that kind of thought more to Mass Effect. Like, I like that in Mass Effect, humans are sort of the new kids on the block, and some of the other species sort of look down at them, like they have to fight for a spot on the council and all that stuff. And though the person who ultimately saves the galaxy is a human, in general, humans aren't, like, the ones in charge. Whereas I feel like in Dragon Age, they are the ones in charge.
The king, and then, mm-hmm. or the queen or whatever, they end up being human. Yeah, I don't know. I was looking at that question, and I was like, I don't really feel that way. So I don't know. I like that in Mass Effect, like you were saying, Pam, that the humans are like, you kind of have to prove yourself, even though it's like super annoying that you have to do it. Because mm-hmm. you're like, no, I saw what I did. And they're like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. Okay. Next question is from Timpo Adante. Is there a moment in any Dragon Age that always makes you cringe playing through it?
Whenever Anders suggests giving Fenris back to Daenerys. Hands down. I'm just like, why would you do this? And it also seems very out of character considering his whole storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just always like, oh god, why would you do this?
Sit down, Anders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anders kind of makes me cringe in general. Especially, like, in Dragon Age, I played Dragon Age 2 before I played Awakenings. Awakening? Yeah. Mm. So when I played Awakening, and I was like, oh, Anders is so much better in Awakening than he is in Dragon Age 2. So, I mean, I know there's the whole justice thing, but still I find Anders sort of generally cringy in Dragon Age 2. Again, with Isabella and Aveline, that's pretty cringy. And then Dragon Age Origins is the whole, like, I'm just going to give this person wine and jewelry until they like me. They definitely improved the relationship building.
Yeah.
All right. So our next question is from Estelia's Lair on Twitter. Dragon Age Origins Deep Roads. A good way to spend an afternoon? Or is there an end to this? What do you think?
Is there an end to this? If I could skip the Deep Roads, at least in Origins. I would do it in a heartbeat. In Inquisition, it's kind of central to unraveling the story, so you can't really skip it. At least I wouldn't skip it, because I feel like it's so integral to the Inquisitor finding out the truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's part of the plot in DA2, so you can't really skip it. So for Origins, definitely, just, is there an end? Will we ever get out of Orzammar, for the love of God?
Yeah, I agree. I think the first time I was like, you know, suitably like creeped out and not enjoying that we were underground and wanting to get back up to the surface, but like not you know, like too worried about being stuck in there forever. And then like subsequent playthroughs, I was like, good Lord, like please let me get out of here. I cannot stand it.
I liked the Deep Roads and Origins. I don't know why. I liked some of the quests in there, like the little notes you'd find and things, and finding treasure, even though most of it was junk. But I was never one of the people who had a problem with the Deep Roads. So
the one thing that I really liked about it was that, and now I can't remember if it's in Origins or not. Because, so it might be completely wrong, but like there's a part where you're looking for, I think it's a female dwarf, and you can like, you hear like voices and stuff, mm-hmm. and it's her like whispering like far away, and then the closer you get to her, like the creepier it gets, and then you find like the brood mother.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah.
Like that on its own could have been enough for it to be good, but it just, like, it felt like it dragged on, but I thought, like, the creepy parts of the Deep Roads, A+, like, good, keep those, but then, like, get rid of everything else, because it just takes so long.
Is the Brood Mother in Origins or Inquisition?
Well, that's why I couldn't, like, I thought, I don't think there is one in Inquisition, is there?
Oh, okay, I don't remember.
Because it's, like, it's warden stuff, so you find out, like, gross stuff about what happens to female wardens if they get taken away, but like, yeah, I don't know, I'm pretty sure it's all in, that's in Origins somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Which is gross.
Very.
Yeah, it's not good.
Well, speaking of wardens, MTO Alpro asks, in your mind, are the wardens good guys, bad guys, neither, and why? I see them as a necessary evil, which is why my warden was super evil and a jerk. So I actually don't know what you're talking about, because reading isn't my thing in Dragon Age Inquisition. What happens to female wardens?
Oh, so when wardens get their calling, you know, they go down into the Deep Roads and, like, fight until they die, right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So with female wardens, what happens is they go down the same as the men do, but then some of them, like, become brood mothers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not gross or anything.
Just, no. Yeah. That's why it's like, yeah, I don't like that bit.
No.
I could do that's, without that.
Yeah. See, I was, oh God, now it's stuck in my head.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I know, because the part with Hespa, just, it's going to be creepy to me forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think the warden's literally, as their name suggests, operates within the gray. I don't think they're evil. Because they were evil, they could easily have taken over Thetis. You know, the Anderfell seems to be the only place where they kind of misuse power. Because, and again, I think this is actual canon lore. I could be wrong. I'm sure if I'm wrong, someone will correct me. But I'm pretty sure, like, in the Anderfells, they more or less run things and they have a puppet king.
They do,
basically does whatever they want. But other places, they are actually neutral.
Yeah. Yeah, like, in the Anderfells, they're actually, like, the police force and then, like, the law enforcers and stuff like that, so.
Yeah, so yeah, I think with the exception of the Anderfells, they are literally neutral. I don't think they're good because they do the things that a lot of people don't have the nerve to do or won't do. Because look at how Jory reacts when he's like, what? I could die? No.
Yeah.
Nope, I'm out. And then, you know.
Well, Duncan, a lot of them aren't becoming wardens because they want to be.
Because it's, they're like, good guys, yeah.
Yeah, it's like either you go to jail or get executed or you become a warden. So,
and like, if you die, you were going to die either way. So good luck.
Yeah, so it's sort of made up of a mishmash of good and bad people, probably. I haven't read any, like, additional, like, any of the books or anything, and my reading of the Inquisition Codex entries is very minimal. So most of my warden thoughts are just based on Origins, where I definitely don't see them as evil. I think that they're doing something that needs to be done, and it's basically just made up of all kinds of different people. Like, there's no you know, one person that represents them. It's just sort of a group of ragtag demon fighters.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Mari in Awakenings is the only person you come across that voluntarily wants to join the Wardens.
Yeah, I think that's right. I've read a couple of the books. The Last Flight, which is, like, all about the Wardens, and then Masked Empire. And, like, the Last Flight one, if you want some background on the Wardens, that's actually, I enjoyed that one. Because I love anything to do with the Wardens, so... But yeah, I don't think they're good or bad. They're just, they're there. Like they're kind of like a tool that needs to be, you know, like kept and honed for when they really need it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I love the Wardens. I love them. I love them.
Oh, you and I are on the same wavelength.
Yeah, I wish we had more warden like stuff to do.
So staying on the warden topic, Estelia has another question. Are you disappointed that we never get to experience the warden's adventure in Dragon Age Inquisition as seen in Leliana's quests?
I mean, yes and no. I don't want to see the... because I think that'd be too hard to do, first of all. Because everybody's wardens are so different. And then also, like, Inquisition was kind of its own... Like, the Inquisitor is the one that you should be focusing on and worrying about. Whereas your warden, like, they had their story and, like, they do get mentioned from time to time. Mm-hmm. But I think it's... Like, I would have loved to see, like, maybe some written stuff, like, in the game, maybe... But I don't know.
I don't know because as much as I love the Wardens, and maybe if we got like a DLC with the Warden story, it'd be cool, but it would have felt wedged in and weird, because especially depending on what state you brought over to Inquisition, It may or may not have been relevant. What if the Warden was dead? What if Leliana never romanced the Warden?
Mm-hmm.
While I'm a big nerd for lore, more codex entries or DLC, because we don't find out what happens when they kind of, you know, flutter off to Weishaupt, or what happens if you exile them. Yeah. This is their second exile. Kind of, are they done? What happens? So if we got any DLC, I would have loved to find out that way, but I'm not really sad or disappointed about it for DAI.
Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of, like... the actual, like, my warden from Origins, I'm fine with not seeing a bunch about them. Though I did find that once I sort of saved the wardens in my playthrough, then all these war table things kept showing up. And it was just like, oh, we have to fight over here. Send the wardens, send the wardens, send the wardens. And then it got to the point where I was like, have I killed all the wardens? Like, can someone explain this to me? So I felt that was sort of glossed over, and I would have liked a little bit more explanation about whether I was killing them all by sending them all on these quests.
Yeah, the only thing I really would have liked to know is if you had a sibling that you sent to the wardens, kind of what happened to them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they wouldn't be anywhere near their calling by the time Inquisition comes up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Gosh, yeah, that would have been, man, how good would that have been if you, like, get to Weishaupt and there's, like, Bethany or Carver, like, standing there, and you're like, what the heck? Oh, that would have been good.
Or, like, if you're Varric and you have to go, well, so you see what happened in the Fade was. And then they come to show up and it's like, oh, this is bad. Because someone, and this is totally not on topic of the question, I'm sorry. But there was a really good comic where someone did kind of like your ally or your sister or brother coming to Skyhold once they get the news about Hawk.
No.
Yeah, it was really sad. I think the first one I saw had Fenris. Can you imagine? Because that's my big gripe about Inquisition is like, Hawk's like, peace out. I know we saved Kirkwall. I'm going to go do this world-saving thing again and leave my ally behind. What? Can you imagine how mad, like, especially, I can see, like, Fenris and or, I don't know, because Sebastian, if you romance Sebastian, how do you explain that? But that's a whole other show. But, like, well, Anders, it makes sense to leave Anders behind because they would kill him. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I just have very complicated and deep feels about Hawk running away from their ally to go help the Inquisition. And then just, Varric writes a sad letter, and that's all you hear about it. He gave Varric a hug. Now we move on.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely would not be the end of it.
Sorry. I have very deep feels about this.
All right. I've got another question from MTO AllPro. Is the Inquisition set to be good for later games, or will it be corrupted like the Warden's Templar Circle and every other organization?
I want to hear what you all have to say first, because I have thoughts.
I think it may depend on what you did with them at the end.
Yeah.
If you, like, disbanded it, quote, unquote, then maybe it would be, like, good, I think. And then if you kept it together, I can see how it would get corrupted that way.
I think Trespasser, that's what it was sort of setting up about, how if you keep the Inquisition, it's going to turn bad, like every other large establishment in Thedas. So I definitely think it has that kind of capacity, since it's basically just this giant army under one person's control who hasn't been chosen by anyone but, like, one person.
I don't know. I'm kind of tired of the good guys become corrupt trope. But I feel like if you decide, yes, we're staying together and our mission is to basically stop Solas no matter what, then there's no way for it to become, not become corrupt. But if you disband it, the Inquisition technically doesn't exist anymore. And then what do you do with the Inquisitor, and how are they going to handle a character that, depending on how you played them, and kind of like, there's not a real good precedent for dealing with disability because now they've got one arm. But there's that revenge angle, because, like, I want to find the egg and smash him myself. So, I don't know. I think it really depends on how you ended the DLC, like you said. So, it could go either way, and who knows? Maybe the Inquisition will just kind of be that intro into whatever we get next, and then they go away? I really, really hope we get to go back. We finally get to go to Tiventer.
Yes, please.
So our next question is another one from Timpo Adante, and it is, which Dragon Age do you feel has the best story, and does it also have the best characters?
Easy, Dragon Age 2.
Yeah, and I think I like the characters in all of them. Like, I wouldn't say the characters are necessarily better, but I think they're done better. Like, again, as you mentioned, Tanya, about how they have their own lives outside of whatever they're doing with Hawk. That's definitely appreciated. I guess they kind of do an Inquisition.
It's not really. It's like Dorian's always at the bookshelf until you wander by. Solas is in his rotunda. And granted, he's painting stuff, but I didn't get that sense that they carried on outside of the Inquisitor that I had with the characters with Hawk.
Yeah,
I don't think it's as much, but there's things like when you go and play chess with Cullen, he's playing with Dorian, or the whole Cassandra and Varric thing. So, yeah, I guess it's not as much as two, but definitely more than Origins, where they just only existed for you.
Yeah.
All right, and our last Dragon Age question is from the Doc Web, and he wants to know the most bittersweet romance. His is a devout Inquisitor romancing Cassandra as she becomes divine.
Ooh, I had that romance, and it was very bittersweet. but I would say Bull if you let him go back to the Canary. Are you okay? Like, that sounded like I punched you in the chest.
So the first playthrough that I had, I did that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't romance him, though, but I did do that. And I brought him with me to the... Actually, no, I didn't bring him with me, but he, like, appeared at the end. And I was like, what's going on? And then... and I felt like such a jackass, but I was like, I also deserve this. But yeah, now that you mentioned the romance part of it, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Because one thing I did, and I actually felt bad enough, I replayed the whole mission, because I did it just to see what happens, is I let Bull choose the Canary, and I just had this terrible, I am the worst human being ever. I should be ashamed, and my ancestors should be ashamed for this choice I just made. I'm going to replay it, and I kept apologizing, because I was actually streaming when I did it, because I'd never let Bull sacrifice the charges. I'm like, for once, let's see what happens. This is my kind of rocks fall, everyone dies playthrough, and I'm like, I can't. Just like, I can never, ever, I don't care how evil of a hawk I'm playing, can I give Fenris back to Daenerys?
No.
Yeah, that was rough. I didn't romance Iron Bull, but I remember, because for my first playthrough, I saved the chargers, so for my second playthrough, I made sure to not do it. And Riley even told me, she's like, it's shocking what happens.
And I
had him in my party at that point, so then I had to like do that big fight afterwards with three people.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, that was bad. In terms of romance, though, the one that always sticks with me is my first Origins playthrough, and I was a city elf in a relationship with Alistair, and I wanted to make Alistair the king, and then he's like, you're not a human, I can't be with you if I'm the king, and I was just like heartbroken.
Oh, Alistair, you fuck.
Alistair, you fuck. Yeah, exactly. I was like so sad. And then I started a new playthrough as a human, but not a human noble, so I did it again.
No. Oh my god.
Yeah, so Alistair has broken my heart multiple times.
Oh no. my nomination is in Dragon Age 2, romancing Anders. But like you have to go through it without knowing anything about anything.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first DA2 playthrough was romancing Anders, and then it just frustrates me so much.
Yeah.
All right. So on that happy note.
On that cheerful end.
Yes. Does anyone have anything else, last words or anything about Dragon Age before we wrap up?
I hope we get some news about what's coming soon, but I'm trying to be patient. I'm going to be optimistic and hope we not only get to go to Tevinter, but that we finally get to like kind of see, depending on what you did with DA2 and DAI, if we get to see Fenris again. Because Fenris and Krem in the same party would be the most amazing thing ever. Mm.
That would be pretty good.
Just all Tevinter party.
I feel like if there's another one, it'll be sort of the same thing, where it's mostly new companions and people.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to know that. I say that every game. I'm like, but what about last game?
Yeah, there's a couple that I'd like to see, like, just kind of where they ended up based on what you did, but I don't know. I definitely want to go to like to a new location. Like Tevinter would be great. Even going to the Anderfells would be kind of cool. I don't think we really have any reason to go there other than to maybe like check out what the wardens are doing, but that's it.
All right. So we will wrap it up there. Tanya, if people want to reach you or read your stuff or listen to your podcast, where can they find you?
I talk a lot on Twitter. Sometimes when I can't sleep, I talk a lot on Twitter. But I'm Cypher of Tears, CypherOfTyr. I have a Facebook kind of people page, which is facebook.com/TanyaDePass. And I have a website, Cypher of Tyr, where I have a sidebar where I kind of put everything I've written, everything I've done, podcasts I've guested on. So a link to this podcast will be there once it goes up. And I'm on Tumblr. That is my fan space. But I also kind of run my mouth and critique fandom. So be warned. I love fandom, but I don't love some of the discussions that happen in fandom. So I have no hesitation about, like, kind of being very ruthless about curating that space. And if you like what I do, my one kind of shameless plug is I've got a Patreon for myself so that I can do this and not have to keep a 9-to-5 day job, which is patreon.com/cipherofteer. And our podcast, Fresh Out of Tokens, which is weekly, and we talk about gaming, intersectionality, feminism, diversity, is funded by the Diverse Games I Need Diverse Games Patreon, which is patreon.com/IneedDIVGMS. And that is a lot of me in a nutshell.
All right. So they've got lots of options. Riley, where can people find you?
I'm basically on Twitter. I'm on Twitter all the time. You can find me at Kaleri, that's K-A-L-E-R-I with an underscore.
And you can find me on Twitter at Josyla underscore or on YouTube where my channel is called Cannot Be Tamed. If you have any feedback, questions, people, or topics you want to hear on future episodes, you can reach out and email us at mediamavenscast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at _mediamavens. And if you like the show, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or share us with a friend. It will help get us in more people's ears. That's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.